From the Property Investor Studios, welcome to The Naked Property Investor with your host, Kizzy Nkwacha.
Kizzy is the publisher of the Property Investor magazine, Money and Finance, and Business Game Changer. Kizzy is also the editor of the successful Property Investment book series and the founder of the Property Wall of Fame. Every week, Kizzy and his guests provide you with the vital tools you need to take your property business to the next level. Now, meet your host, your mentor, and the godfather of all things property, Kizzy Nkwacha.
Hello and welcome to The Naked Property Investor. My guest this week is Lauren Howard, the founder and president of Prime Plus Mortgages, an Arizona hard money lender. Now, Lauren is a highly regarded property entrepreneur who's also launched companies in several verticals. Lauren's also had a successful football career and is a coveted world record holder for indoor rowing in the 500 meters and 100 meters. In just a few minutes, I'll be talking to Lauren to uncover his secrets for property investment success. Don't go away.
Greetings from Australia. Hi all, my name's Stephen Lazar. My company is Property Network. Previously, I was a financial planner for 15 years and the last 13 years, a professional in the property space, helping my clients secure investment-grade property. The way we love to work is getting an understanding of where our clients are at now, where they want to be by when, their reason why, and the purpose for the investment. When we understand that, we can help put a strategy in place in which our clients can work towards in securing their goals. When working with a client, we'll educate them to the point where they can make that informed investment decision. If we have to sell it to them, we've done wrong. This is the way we love to work. What we find as stumbling blocks with clients is 80% of people will never be able to retire, primarily because they have a poor relationship with and to money. And it's in our interest to focus on the 20% who are driven, who do have a better relationship with money and who want to succeed in life. If you spend 80% on your efforts on someone who is never going to make a decision, it's wasting your time and your energy and your resources, which you could be applying better elsewhere. So the clients we love to work with are those who, as I say, are paying income tax, have goals, are committed to themselves, are open to being challenged, and like to challenge us, all for the purpose of them coming to an informed decision. Once again, Stephen Lazar, Property Network in Australia. We look to match strategy to clients' requirements, purpose, and goals, and that way help them build wealth through astute property investment and making informed, educated decisions.
Coming up on this week's Naked Property Investor.
Because this downturn has been fueled by a pandemic and not a debt crisis or a debt cycle or any other bubble that bursts, I am hopeful that it'll be a pretty fast recovery and we still have an inning or two to play in the grand scheme of things.
I'm Sim Sekon, MD of Legal for Landlords, and you're listening to The Naked Property Investor.
Thanks for dropping in. This week, I'm in the studio with Lauren Howard. Lauren is a former college athlete who became a successful entrepreneur after a career-ending injury. He's an active real estate investor, entrepreneur, hard money lender, and philanthropist. But before we introduce Lauren, I've been reminded to tell you that The Property Investor is producing its annual showcase of the top 10 outstanding property specialists 2020. The showcase covers all disciplines from commercial and residential developers to design, finance, and property marketing. To be eligible for the award, the specialist must work in one of the following regions: the UK, Australia, or the US. For information about how to nominate yourself, a colleague, or a client for inclusion in the top 10 outstanding property specialists 2020, email tpieditor@email.com. That email address one more time is tpieditor@email.com. Good luck. Okay, let's get back to the show. Lauren, thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I'm happy to be here. I'm excited to talk with you.
Tell me, what is a hard money lender? I've been wondering about this all week, and I just need you to clarify. What is hard money, and why do I need it?
Sure, good question. So hard money lenders are asset-based lenders, okay? So we don't lend based on a credit profile. We lend based on the underlying value of an asset. People that use us typically are people that are buying properties with quick closes for investment purposes, primarily like a fix and flip lender. So imagine if you're buying a property that's distressed or pre-foreclosure, or from some kind of motivated seller, and you need to close in 7 days, 10 days, you're going to come to a guy like me, I require very little to underwrite the deal. All I need is pictures of the property, the contract, it has a purchase price. And then from there, I can make a decision pretty quickly because we are going to make the loan based on the underlying value of the asset. We require anywhere between 10 and 20% down. And our rates are usually between 12 and 16, kind of depending on what the market will give us and how competitive and how much money we have. And they're short-term loans. So they're six-month loans that we extend past 6 months. Typically, they're for transactional financing for people to buy distressed properties and then fix them up on their own dime, or we'll do also the rehab financing for them. And then they usually sell the property, take their profits, or they refinance out into longer term, cheaper financing. So that's what hard money loans are.
And what sort of band do you operate within? What's the average loan? What's the minimum? And is there a maximum?
Yeah, good question. So our average loan size is right around about 170, 180,000. So they're smaller, properties. But for us, we like to play in that sandbox because they're very rentable properties in a downturn. And also it's easier for people to cash flow their debt service on them because, if you had a 14% loan on a $500,000 house and it was a spec home, it's gonna be very hard for you to cash flow that. So there's no really minimums. We usually charge a little more interest if it's, under 100,000, and maximums we can go up to, $500,000 or $600,000. But, on the maximum side, we always underwrite a little harder, want a little bit more skin in the game. For apparent reasons, obviously, we want it to be a little harder for them to walk away from in a downturn. So we're padded a little more on our equity. So we require a little more down the higher up you get in the values.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about you. How did you get started in real estate investing? I mean, you had this incredible career as an athlete, and now you've made a name for yourself in real estate investing. How did you get this started?
Yeah, good question. So, my football career was cut short in college prior to, I was supposed to go to the NFL and going into my, I was a blue chip All American and Big Ten defensive freshman of the year, all Big Ten, and I got hurt. And getting hurt, I kind of ventured off into, I decided I was going to start a business and kind of became a serial entrepreneur. I didn't make any money or I learned a lot the first couple of years, and I got started in a sexual enhancement product that we were trying to manufacture, and I call that my MBA. And then from there I got into web design and development. I opened an office over in India with a guy who I met that built our website for the enhancement product, and I got into SEO, selling SEO and selling web design packages. And then I got into direct-to-consumer marketing, generating leads, and that's kind of where I made my first $1 million. And then from there, I got into started a compounding pharmacy from grassroots and grew that to about 170 employees in 40 different states. And in the meantime, I had a guy I met who kind of taught me the rope of hard money. He was investing my money and paying me 12% and kind of taking an arbitrage. And I found out that he wasn't doing things necessarily the right way as far as ethically goes with me. So I took back a bunch of properties from him, and I met someone else that kind of taught me the industry. So long story short, I've been a serial entrepreneur since I was about 22. I'm 36 now, and so I've built, four or five different companies in I think four different industries that have, done 7-8 figures a year in revenue. But I've started a lot of companies that failed as well. So it's, you win some, you lose some. And I like the lending space because I think it's going to be around for a long time. Once you build it up, it's kind of like an annuity, the portfolio. And, we've been able to grow with our own money and bank money. So we haven't had to take on investors yet, or many of them. We have a couple notes we've sold. So long answer to a short question, but hopefully it covers it.
Absolutely. I was just wondering then, when you made this decision to start Prime Plus Mortgages, what were the initial challenges you faced and how did you overcome them?
In Arizona, you can do some lending on the side, I think up to 5 deals a year. And if you don't charge points or fees, so, we were lending on the side, me and my partner out of our different companies. And then as we continued to grow, if I wanted to become, market and I wanted to originate and process and charge points and fees, we had to go and get our banking license. So, I had to figure all that out. I had to figure out the process of getting the banking license, which I didn't have any idea about, you know, responsible individual, the legality of it, how it all works, the loan docs. And then after that, you know, of course you got to, you know, you got to get deal flow. And then, you know, we started off with a pile of cash, and then we said, well, how can we increase this pile of cash with our deal flow that's coming in? And so we had to align ourselves with banks and figure out how to securitize under revolving lines of credit our notes so that we could borrow against our note portfolio to roll our money over. You know, that's why we know that continually increase the portfolio. So, you know, there's, you know, seeing how it wasn't my first business, it was my first dabble in the lending and banking industry, but I'd had a business background. My partner's got a business background of a lot of successful companies for many, many years. So, you know, it's one of those things. It's a lot of fun. It's challenging, but, you know, I really enjoy kind of learning and growing. I like climbing the mountain more than I like the ascent or the top, the summit. So, yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
But for you, it sounds like it's the journey that really makes it worthwhile.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, I think everyone's got to wake up with something that they enjoy doing, and I think they got to know themselves. And for me, I operate in the healthiest Lauren when I have things I'm challenged for. I'm building teams. I'm learning. I'm growing. I'm scaling. You know, when I get complacent or things get too auto fire, I get a little bit restless and it gets me in trouble. You know.
Well, I'm just wondering that the line of work that you've chosen to be in sounds as though there's a great deal of uncertainty, because here you are with a substantial amount of money and you've got to make the decision who to invest in, who to lend this money to, and hoping that they'll honor the agreement and make the repayments when they've contracted to. Is there this much uncertainty, or am I seeing it from a different perspective?
Maybe a little bit different perspective. So the key is to know what the liquidation values of these homes are when you underwrite them. And that's why the beauty of asset-based lending, right? So we have a very low default rate, but when we default, we haven't lost any money on any of those loans to date. I also own about 20 rental properties that are short term, and a couple vacation rentals right now, which we can't give away because of COVID-19. But so, you know, when we take a property back, there's equity in the property, and so, you know, as long as, you know, property values don't suppress, you know, 20%, 15%, 20%, I don't think they'll do that at the average loan size and the sandbox that we play in. They always could, but if they did, you know, from an exit strategy in that perspective, we had a huge default rate. We could take them back, get them rent ready, put a renter in there, and then refinance them out into a revolving line of credit like I have with my other properties, and I'd be able to cash flow positive any of the debt service. So that's kind of the way that I look at it when I'm kind of analyzing the portfolio and the risk. So I don't see a tremendous amount of risk, because, you know, we're insulated across over 100 loans, and we kind of know the property values very well.
I'm just wondering, you seem to have mastered the art of mastering uncertainty. And at the moment, a lot of real estate investors are struggling to adapt to the uncertainty created by the pandemic. What advice would you offer real estate investors at this time?
That's a good question, but you know, there's going to be a lot of good deals if you have cash or access to cash. Like, for instance, right now what's happening in the market is a lot of the hard money is dried up because either people that have large funds are getting redemption requests, or, you know, they're getting forbearance requests, or, you know, payments aren't coming in. So people are getting more conservative with their lending, and there's still deals, a lot of deals out there. It's just whether you have cash or not. And really it depends on your individual investment strategy. Are you trying to, you know, wholesale? Are you a fix and flip investor? If you are, kind of what's your bread and butter? What market do you play in? Are you a lender? You know, so all those things need to take into consideration. And, you know, you need to watch, you need to be a student of the game, right? Watch the leading indicators, watch, you know, the supply and the demand indicators as far as how those are performing, the supply going up, demand going down. And these are unprecedented times. So we don't have a crystal ball, but a lot of it's also going to depend on how long this pandemic keeps everyone at shelter at home. And so I guess I would just say really know your data and don't try to guess. Try to look at the leading indicators that are going to tell you the story and be on top of them, and always proceed with caution. You know, it really depends on everyone's individual situation. If you have a lot of cash and you're a big investor, then there's gonna be blood in the streets. You know, like in the vacation rental market right now, I mean, people that are over leveraged on their vacation rentals that can't cash flow because they got too many cancels and no one's renting anymore are going to go on the market, right? And they're going to need to sell those things and probably sell them for a discount, or they're going to try to rent them. As what we're seeing right now is they're trying to turn them into long-term furnished rentals, but that's just driving the rents down on those as well. So it's going to be very hard for people to cash flow. So I suspect people are holding on here and seeing what's going to happen as far as opening the economy up back again in the next, you know, 2 weeks to 30 days and where that stands. Hopefully it's a, you know, it's a V-shaped bounce and everyone gets back to work and it's not too detrimental, but this really depends on what your individual strategy is, honestly.
I understand. And I know what you mean about gazing into a crystal ball, because I would like to ask you, how resilient do you believe the US housing market is to this pandemic? Are we likely to see drastic price fall in the housing market because of this pandemic?
You know, I think there's certain areas are going to get hit harder than others, right? And there's certain markets are a little frothy prior to this anyway. But keep in mind, the rate environment is super, super low, right? So, you know, and like, I'll give you an example. Like in Arizona, in order for the supply and the demand to be an even buyers and sellers market, you need about 30,000 active listings. And, you know, we've been hanging around 10,000. I think we're up to 12,000 now. So it's still a seller's market and prices are still going up. I think the Arizona market specifically has a little bit of a tailwind because it's still pretty affordable. A lot of people are moving here from the Midwest and from California. That's the fastest growing county in the country. But it really depends. I mean, the government's doing a lot right now to help out workers and consumers. And they are, you know, allowing loans to be mandatory forbearance, payment, like mortgage payment deferment. They're trying to flood the economy with cash, printing a lot of money. So because this downturn has been fueled by a pandemic and not a debt crisis or a debt cycle or any other bubble that bursts, I am hopeful that it'll be a pretty fast recovery, and we still have, you know, an inning or two to play in the grand scheme of things.
You sound very optimistic for the future.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a pretty optimistic person myself. I'm pretty much of the opinion that smart people will figure this shit out, you know. But that's just my personality. I'm a very optimistic person. You know, I'm a little more insulated too. Like my employees are virtual. I'm the only, you know, W-2 employee of the company. It's more of an investment vehicle for me as opposed to, you know, if I had my pharmacy where I had, you know, 170 employees and this was going on right now and I'm having to furlong and lay off and apply for help. It's a different situation. I just happen to be myself personally with my business, and I'm going to make less money, but it's not going to kill me. So maybe my opinion's biased, but I do think that housing, you know, banks right now aren't really, you know, necessarily super concerned, I don't think, with you know, my type of product, which is, you know, single family homes that have good equity in them, that they're more worried about their clients that own hotels and commercial retail real estate, where they're trying to reassess their cash flow and figure out if they need to lower their borrowing base on the securitization of their loans. And so I'm in very close contact with my bankers, and you know, even a couple of them are working on giving me higher lines of credit. So, you know, I am hopeful, but this goes on 3 more months, that opinion might change, you know.
But from indications, it looks as though the government is hoping to lift restrictions within the month or so. Fingers crossed that they'll stick to that, and we should see ourselves climbing out of this recession if the indications are true.
Correct. I think so. Another thing with COVID-19, and I've been kind of thinking this in my head all along, but they're reporting the death rate based on confirmed cases. Okay. I suspect, and they've already done a study in Santa Clara County, I think is what it was. Don't quote me on that, but, where they started testing for antibodies, of a small percentage of the population randomly, and then applying that results to the entire population of that county. And they're thinking it's 35 to 55 times higher the infection rate. Okay. Which would drop the death rate down to less than 0.1 or right around 0.1%, which is right around what influenza is anyway. So there might be a lot of overreaction to this. We still don't know. My theory is they'll open things back up. There might be another resurgence in the fall, but I think that it's peaked. I think people will be more prepared for it. I think that they're going to find, in the meantime, treatments. They're also going to find, the infection, how infectious it is by testing the antibodies. I think they'll probably eventually get to a vaccine. And I think in a year from now, this will be treated like a flu or a common cold type thing. And 5 years from now, you look back at this and it'll be kind of crazy, but probably I'm hoping a blip on the radar. We'll see.
Let's hope you're right. In a couple of years' time, we'll be looking back and thinking, well, we got through this and we can now move on and build a better future. We've just got about enough time to go to the section of the show called the 30-second masterclass. Now, don't panic. What this means is that you'd have 30 seconds to sum up the most important lessons our listeners should take away from our conversation today. Are you game?
I'm game. Let's do it.
Excellent. Well, Lauren, 30 seconds and the clock starts now. What should we take away? What should we learn?
That in these times, you always want to watch the data and let the data drive your decisions. When you're making decisions to invest. So don't be compulsive. Don't let fear drive your decisions. Be a student of the data. Look towards the past and try to project the future. And then, be calm and patient. The brain that's in fear and fear mode is going to, put your fear glasses on. You're going to see the world a different way and it's going to cloud your judgment. So in these types of times, I think you hunker down, you look at your budget, you trim down whatever you can, and then you try to let the data tell a story and make a decision based on the data.
Fantastic. And I think you got in under 30 seconds. Fantastic.
All right.
Well done. Lauren, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for sharing your insight and your wisdom on The Naked Property Investor.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.